It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Once someone receives all of their necessary information to complete their tax return, and they are able to prove that they have a hardship through their eviction notice or late payment through their Virginia Power bill, for example, cutoff notices, then we are sometimes able to expedite them receiving their refund outside of the normal processing.
This can be a substantial amount of money, Marty. The maximum earned income tax credit for 2008 for a family with two or more children is over $4,800.
Amy Durham from the Taxpayer Advocate Service and Paul Harrison from the Community Tax Law Project offer tax tips for the 2008 tax year and for your income tax filing due April 15, 2009. And, following up from last week's question and answer, you'll learn more about when you can and cannot extend your employer-provided health insurance under COBRA. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 37, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM Richmond Independent Radio and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Last month, the Virginia General Assembly passed the Charity Care Information Bill. This three-sentence act says, quote, "All hospitals shall provide written information about the hospital's charity care policies, including policies related to free and discounted care. Such information shall be posted conspicuously in public areas of the hospital, including admissions or registration areas, emergency departments, and associated waiting rooms. Information regarding specific eligibility criteria and procedures for applying for charity care shall be provided to a patient at the time of admission or discharge or at the time services are provided, included with any billing statement sent to uninsured patients, and included on any website maintained by the hospital." Unquote. This new law, effective July 1, 2009, will go a long way to removing the mystery of how to get free and discounted care from hospitals. In other news, on February 17, 2009, President Obama signed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. This new law provides a one-time payment of $250 to people getting Social Security and Supplemental Security income. More than 60 million people will receive a one-time payment. The Social Security Administration expects all payments to be delivered by late May 2009 and is asking the public not to contact them unless you have not received your payment by June 4, 2009. You can learn more about these one-time payments at Social Security's website, which is www.ssa.gov. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Keep on. are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF. TANF is a federal and state program that gives financial assistance to families with children. To qualify, your family must include a child under 18 years of age who is a U.S. citizen or eligible immigrant, and at least one adult relative of the child. Your family also must be needy and meet good conduct requirements. These include work requirements, school attendance, and childhood vaccinations, and also not having a felony drug conviction and not giving birth to a child while receiving TANF. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
It's time once again for the weekly question and answer, and here we are in our studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I live in Richmond.
Thank you, Sarah. Welcome to the show. What question can we answer for you this week?
My husband and I, we are in the process of going through a divorce. And my question is, once the divorce is final, is it possible that I can stay on his medical insurance, or would I have to be taken off?
And is your husband getting some type of group health insurance through his employer?
Yes.
And does his employer have 20 or more covered employees in that group plan?
They have more.
Okay, I was hoping the answers to both would be yes, because under that situation, your husband's group health insurance plan is what we call a COBRA plan. And that requires that private employees who normally have more than 20 or more employees, provide family members the opportunity to continue to receive health insurance after what's called a qualifying event. Now, there's a whole list of qualifying events, but the six most common would be the death of the covered employee. In that case, you as his widow could still have coverage. If the covered employee is fired or has a reduction in hours, a divorce or legal separation of the covered employee, that's exactly what you're talking about. The covered employee becomes entitled to Medicare and so no longer on the plan, but you could stay on the plan. A child would perhaps age out of the plan and lose dependent status, but they could still get coverage. And also, if the employer files a Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization, the coverage would continue. This is a very timely question because a lot of people are losing their health insurance because they're getting laid off and they get the right to continued coverage. Unfortunately, a lot of people are losing their coverage because their employer is going out of business, like Circuit City, the Chapter 7. In that case, there is no coverage. But in your case, even if you get divorced or legally separated, you would be entitled to continued coverage. Now, there's a catch. The coverage does not go forever. It goes for a maximum of 18 months if your husband were to be terminated or have his hours reduced. It goes for a maximum of 36 months for all those other reasons. So you could have the coverage for up to 3 years. But you have to pay for it. That's the real catch. That's what really gets people. Because normally the employer is providing the cost of that coverage either in full or mostly. And so the employee contribution would be, you know, sometimes 5%, 10%. COBRA coverage, you pay the full cost. And that may sound like a lot. That may sound pretty steep. But if you were to go out on the private market and try to buy a private individual health insurance policy, It would probably be way more than the COBRA coverage. So it's certainly something that you ought to look into. Have you looked into what the cost of private health insurance would be as opposed to the cost of the continuation of COBRA coverage?
I have, and the prices are very high.
I'm not at all surprised, and that's why this law, as limited as it is certainly still better than nothing. Appreciate you being on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walk. lifting up the freedom land.
We're here at the Community Tax Law Project, and we're talking with Amy Durham, who is a taxpayer advocate with the Internal Revenue Service, as well as Paul Harrison, who is the Low Income Tax Clinic Coordinator for the Community Tax Law Project. Welcome to the show to both of you.
Thank you.
First question, I guess, is to Amy. Tell us, what are the issues for low income and, I guess, moderate income taxpayers for tax year 2008 for the 2009 filing?
Many of the folks that are coming into the Taxpayer Advocate Service in our office are experiencing hardships. They are having hardships. A lot of them are based on the economy, in that they've lost their jobs, they are being evicted from their homes, they are unable to pay whatever monies that they currently owe to the IRS, and are fearful of contacting the IRS to set up some type of an installment agreement or renegotiate their agreement. You know, the economy itself has caused many citizens to be financially strapped, and sometimes they turn to the government to expedite their refunds.
And so what type of hardship provisions are there that the IRS can do for helping people in that situation?
One thing that we can do is, once someone receives all of their necessary information to complete their tax return and they are able to prove that they have a hardship through their eviction notice or late payment through their Virginia Power bill, for example, cutoff notices, then we are sometimes able to expedite them receiving their refund outside of the normal processing.
And what if someone, it turns out, is not owed a refund but actually owes taxes? Is there some sort of hardship provision for those folks to help them not necessarily get tax relief but to have more time to pay their taxes?
One thing that we do while we're looking at the account and analyzing the person's ability to repay that debt is take financial information from them to include their income, how often they're paid, how constant that income is, their ability to pay based on their current necessary living expenses. And, you know, again, an analysis is done to determine their ability to pay. Many times they don't have the ability to pay, and the IRS is able to put their accounts into currently not collectible, or if they can pay some, then they're put on a installment agreement where they partially pay their liability versus paying all of it.
Paul, I wanted to ask you about the Earned Income Tax Credit. Would you tell us a little bit about that and what it is and who qualifies?
The Earned Income Tax Credit is, Marty, is a benefit for working taxpayers, particularly those with children who are earning low to moderate incomes. Basically, any single taxpayer who earned less than $12,880 in 2008 would qualify for the Earned Income Tax Credit for taxpayers with no children. If the taxpayer has one child and they earned less than almost $37,000 for a married couple, if they had one children, they would qualify for the EITC. And for two or more children, this goes up to $38,646 or $41,646 for a married couple with two or more children. So a large segment of the population, particularly the parents in the country, will qualify for the Earned Income Tax Credit if they are working and if they file their tax return.
Now, of course, you might have a situation where a child's parents are separated, divorced, or perhaps never even married, but the parents don't live together. In that situation, who gets to claim the child for the Earned Income Tax Credit?
This is really, really simple. Only the custodial parent ever gets to claim the Earned Income Tax Credit. The credit was enacted as an aid, and its intent was to aid parents of small children in re-entering or entering the workforce, so that whichever parent has custody of the children, which is determined by where the children are for more than 6 months out of the year, that is the only parent who can claim the Earned Income Tax Credit. It cannot be traded among the parents.
So what if the, I guess, non-custodial parent tries to claim the earned income tax credit anyway. What should the custodial parent do?
The custodial parent should file his or her tax return in the usual way, claiming the tax benefits to which they believe they are entitled, which would include the earned income tax credit. If the non-custodial parent has filed first, this may prevent the custodial parent from e-filing their return. That does not mean that that parent cannot file a return. What we advise people to do in those circumstances is to file a paper return, make their claim for the earned income tax credit. The IRS generally responds with an examination notice saying, essentially, we have questions about your earned income tax credit claim. Then we recommend that those taxpayers call Community Tax Law Project, and we will help them provide the information that they need to the IRS to prove that they were entitled to the earned income tax credit.
Okay. Well, how much money are we talking about here?
This can be a substantial amount of money, Marty. The maximum earned income tax credit for 2008 for a family with two or more children is over $4,800. So, you know, if you kind of project that into a family with one parent who's earning perhaps $16,000, $17,000 a year, we're talking about 25, even, you know, a larger percentage of the entire year's worth of income for that family. This can mean the difference between, you know, keeping the electricity running through the final months of winter, or, you know, paying off a fuel bill, buying a used car, you know, or perhaps establishing a college savings account for children. You know, these can be significant benefits for a family that often will lead that family out of poverty and into a greater level of self-sufficiency.
Okay. Well, you mentioned e-filing, that is filing through electronic filing. What is your recommendation for the best way for people to file their income tax returns?
If people are looking for an inexpensive, reliable way to get their taxes tax returns filed quickly, they would be well advised to look for a VITA program, a Volunteer Income Tax Assistance in Richmond. This is through the Greater Richmond Earned Income Tax Credit Coalition. There are locations all over the city of Richmond, Henrico County, Chesterfield County, where people can have their tax returns done at no charge, and the returns will be filed electronically. This means they're processed more quickly. This means that refunds are processed more quickly and they get to the taxpayer more quickly than is normally the case. If people are comfortable using computers and relatively have easy access to a computer, then the IRS has what's called the Free File Alliance, which provides free software for people to use online, starting out at www.irs.gov. And this year, a new program has been introduced, which provides essentially fillable forms online that people can use to e-file their tax returns themselves. If people make too much money to qualify for free income tax preparation services and do feel they need to go to a commercial tax preparer, my advice is that the only thing that counts in getting a tax return filed is whether or not it's done correctly. And if it's done correctly, that will be the largest refund to which you are entitled. So I would always urge people to go to a reputable tax preparer, which in most cases would mean a certified public accountant or an enrolled agent or someone who has been in a community for long enough to have established a good reputation for doing things right.
And what about those ads you see about the fast refund, instant refund? And tell us about the refund anticipation loan and how to spot it and what it is and why people may not want to do that.
Generally speaking, in my experience, and Amy, chime in if you have any other thoughts, the speed with which the IRS issues a refund is the same regardless of where you go to have your tax returns done. It will be in 7 to 14 days after a return is e-filed, and that varies a little bit depending on, you know, how busy they are in processing. Anyone who says they can get you a refund faster than anyone else, that's a refund anticipation loan. A refund anticipation loan is essentially the taxpayer is paying someone else to borrow his or her own money. And that doesn't make any more sense to me than it does to any of you listeners out there. You're only going to get the refund a couple of days faster than you would get it if you didn't take the refund anticipation loan. And so we recommend that people not do that. I mean, if you are working, like most Americans are, to earn the money that you earn and you have filed your tax return, you are getting a refund of your own money that you have earned. And I just believe that we should all get all the money that we're entitled to.
So I guess this brings us back sort of full circle to where we started. I mean, from what you say, Paul, no tax preparer, whether it's volunteer or paid, can get you your refund any quicker than 7 to 14 days. Anyone who says otherwise is basically selling you a high-cost loan.
Exactly.
But if the IRS, I gather through the hardship, can do it a little quicker than the 7 to 14 days. Amy, can you join in on that?
Absolutely. We can get it. Again, those hardships have to be documented. You know, they've got to show us that their vehicle is being repossessed by a particular date. And if we allow that tax return and the refund to be issued through normal processing, by then their car may be taken from them. So we are able to, get the refund to them much faster once it's documented.
And just approximately, what's the range of time that you can get a refund once everything's filed and you're using this hardship provision?
Once the magical day comes and the Taxpayer Advocate Service has everything that they need to get the refund processed, if the refund is going through the mail, the taxpayer will get it within 7 to 10 business days. If they have a bank account in which we can direct deposit the refund into, it can be as little as 3 days.
Which is clearly a lot better than 7 to 14. We're almost out of time, but Amy, tell us, how would someone get the services of the Taxpayer Advocate Service?
Well, here locally in Virginia, every state has a Taxpayer Advocate Service. In Virginia, you can call us directly. Our number is 804-916-3501, and we have employees there that answer the telephones, that can look at the account, go over your situation with you, and determine if you meet the criteria to be assisted in the Taxpayer Advocate Service. You're then assigned to a caseworker who you have direct contact with. You have their telephone number, and you can check on the status of your case as it goes through the IRS system.
And over to you, Paul. How would someone get the services of the Community Tax Law Project?
We are also here in Richmond locally, and our telephone number is 358-5855. And outside of the 804 area, we can be reached at 800-295-0110. And we have an automated answering system, so people can call at any time, day or night, and we'll get back in contact with them as soon as we can after that. We also have a mailbox where Spanish-speaking Virginians can leave a message for us in Spanish, and we'll have our translators retrieve the message, and we'll get back to them as soon as we can after that.
These are both wonderful services. We have been speaking with Amy Durham with the Taxpayer Advocate Service with the Internal Revenue Service, as well as with Paul Harrison at the Community Tax Law Project, both here in Richmond. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
This week's top three tips are about bankruptcy. The first tip is that there are two kinds of bankruptcy for people not engaged in business, Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. Under a Chapter 7, you may not have to repay any of your debts before they are discharged. Under a Chapter 13, you must repay your debts, at least in part. before they are discharged. The second tip is that you can file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy only once every 8 years, or a Chapter 13 bankruptcy only once every 2 years. The third tip is that you should file bankruptcy only if you have income or property that you are about to lose that a bankruptcy will help you to save. If you have no income or property that can be taken to pay a judgment, you probably don't need a bankruptcy. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. More foreclosures are coming than have yet occurred. Join us next week when Paula Sherman from Housing Opportunities Made Equal offers practical advice on what homeowners must do to save their home or home equity. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Redgrave.